This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
It's Wednesday, April the 9th, and you're very welcome to this special edition of the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Hugh Linehan. Earlier on today, Simon Harris became the youngest Taoiseach in the history of the state when his nomination for the job was approved by a comfortable majority in Dáil Éireann. It has been a day of parliamentary and constitutional protocol, and the new Taoiseach, as we speak, I think is about to make his way for the second time today off to the Phoenix Park, where the first meeting of the new cabinet will take place. Here to reflect on these events are Pat Leahy and Jennifer Bray from our political team. Good evening to you both.
Good evening.
Thank you.
So Pat, the first action of the new government relates to Palestine.
Yeah, so just literally in the last couple of minutes before we sat down to record here, Micheál Martin reappointed, you'll be glad to hear, as Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs, has told the Dáil that Ireland will shortly formally recognise the state of Palestine. He said that it is not delaying recognition. So the previous position of the Irish government has always been that they will recognise the state of Palestine at a time when it can contribute to the peace process. Under the Oslo Accords, states were supposed to wait until the borders were settled and then they would recognise the two, recognise the state of Palestine. And anyway, Micheál Martin has said that they're not going to delay any longer. He is, he said, it's my intention to bring to the government a formal proposal on recognition. And so what I'm told is that that is likely to happen coincident with the launch of an Arab-led peace initiative in the Middle East, which is due to happen, I'm told, in a matter of weeks rather than months. And at that point, Ireland, along with, I understand, some other European countries...
Yeah, so this has been flagged a little bit over the last while,
yeah,
hasn't
so
it, that there's a bit of a coordinated effort going on here?
The former Taoiseach, as we must now call him, Leo Varadkar, issued a statement along with the prime ministers of Malta, Slovenia and Spain at the last European summit in Brussels, which was only a couple of weeks ago, indicating that they stood ready to recognise the state of Palestine. And so now it seems we're moving to the further phase when that recognition is now more or less imminent. Insofar as what it will actually mean...
Is it significant?
I think it's symbolically significant. We'll wait and see, I suppose, what the Israeli response to it is, and that may tell us something about whether it is significant or not. But it is certainly significant from the Palestinian point of view. I've talked to government people over the years about this and asked them about this, and one of the questions that they had, well, you know, which Palestinian government would you be recognising? Because clearly there was a different administration in the West Bank as there was on the Gaza Strip, which was ruled, as we know, by Hamas. Now, it seems that the war in Gaza, the assault on Gaza, has changed the political context, certainly insofar as the government and several other EU governments are concerned, and they are now going to move on that. I'm also told while I was walking down here that the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez is likely to be here to meet Simon Harris on Friday, and so that is amongst the issues that they are likely to push forward with, I think.
Right, so moving from those issues of high statecraft, and indeed I think some would say given current circumstances, life and death for some people, Jen, to the grubby manoeuvrings of government formation, it's a big, as I said, slightly theatrical sort of a day today. Everybody knew what was going to happen up to a point, but there was a little bit of drama and a couple of reveals.
I don't know if there was really any drama to it in the end. Certainly I didn't think it was very dramatic at all. I thought it was quite a conservative change that Simon Harris has implemented in cabinet. You know, he had the option to go in, swing an axe and knock down all the deck chairs, well, on the Fine Gael side in the very least, and he decided instead to just dole out a promotion or two instead. So we know now that Peter Burke, Longford Westmeath TD, will go to Enterprise. So this is the position vacated by Simon Coveney. So that was pretty much an easy enough decision. He'd been widely tipped for that role. And Patrick O'Donovan, Limerick TD, he will now go to the role vacated by Simon Harris, which is further in higher education. It was also announced in the Dáil that Jennifer Carroll McNeill will be the new Minister of State for European Affairs, and Hilgard Nocton will remain as the chief whip, but she will take over the job previously, which has now been vacated by Josepha Madigan, which is basically special education. And then, of course, the big question over the last couple of days was Helen McEntee. What would she stay? Would she go? Would Simon Harris press, you know, the red button and the trapdoor opens and she falls through the floor? No, she remained. And I actually think it became quite evident over the weekend, just from watching their interactions at the Oirdheis, that she probably knew she was going to stay. She seemed very comfortable. And in the Dáil this morning, they were sitting together and you could just kind of tell by looking at her that she knew she was safe.
So, there was obviously a fair bit of to-ing and fro-ing went on over the past week or so, Pat, about this. And in fact, the prospect of her being moved seemed to recede gradually since the weekend, partly because it was perceived, as Jen said, but maybe because it was seen not to be such a good idea to move her.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as Jen says, that was probably becoming apparent in the last couple of days. Now, I've covered a million reshuffles and I'm always wary that a lot of reshuffle speculation is built on little more than what people would like to happen or... It's rarely based, the speculation is rarely based on hard information. Having said that, the speculation was pretty much on the money with regard to most of the moves. I suppose it was a slight bit of surprise that Hildegard Nocton didn't get promoted to higher education. The suggestions around the place last night and indeed this morning was that she would be moved from chief whip to higher education. Patrick O'Donovan would come in as chief whip. And just for on a point of constitutional clarification, the chief whip sits at cabinet but is not a member of the cabinet as such. And now, in these days, you know, when there aren't votes at cabinet, that is perhaps, you know, not all that important a distinction. But I suppose the important thing is that she doesn't have a big department to manage. Anyway, she remains as chief whip. Patrick O'Donovan comes straight into the cabinet and takes over as minister for further and higher education. I guess speculation around Leinster House or the interpretation around Leinster House would tend to be that his real job is Minister for Munster. You know, that
absolutely.
You couldn't leave Munster with the departure of Simon Coveney, you couldn't leave Munster without a cabinet minister. I'm kind of sceptical about that. I don't doubt that that may well have been the political reasoning of it, but I'm pretty sceptical about the validity of that reasoning, because I think that the notion that people in Cork will be delighted that there's a minister from Munster based in Limerick
it's a bit counterintuitive.
Clearly, if it is so held, it is held by people who are not from Cork. I think.
Yeah. The red jersey is all very well, but it only goes so far, doesn't it?
The people from Cork weren't even that impressed with the Cork minister the last time, to
this
say nothing
true.
Of people from Tipperary
and
Kerry. But I do think, funnily enough, though, that it works differently in the West, whereas there is always a fear in the West that they're being ignored, whereas if there's a cabinet minister in the region, whether it be in Galway or Mayo or Sligo or wherever, that tends to
I remember
them
when
somewhat.
Derek Haleary didn't get a full ministership at the start of this government, there was a piece in one of the local newspapers in Mayo describing it as a Cromwellian government. So I mean, I think that
worse than Cromwell, but my point is that could have easily have been a sentiment in Galway about a Mayo minister. Whereas in Munster, frankly, we all hate one another. So it doesn't really work quite the same, I think.
Well, that's good to know. There will be many listeners who will be saying, who the hell is Patrick O'Donovan? Who the hell is this chap Burke? We've never heard of them. What does it mean that they're ministers now?
Yeah.
What, if anything, can we take from that, Jen?
Well, Patrick O'Donovan, he's an interesting one. He was elected in 2011. He was also on Limerick County Council, I think, 2004. I think he trained as a primary school teacher. I also think he worked as an industrial chemist. And he had different roles on different kind of committees down through the years. I know he was on the British-Irish Parliamentary Assembly. He did kind of fly below the radar in many ways, I think. You know, he's not somebody who I think people listening to the podcast, or even people who don't listen to the podcast, who kind of just keep a cursory glance on the news, would really know that much about him. Like, I'm surprised that I know that
about him. Is he a little bit feisty? Like, he's crossed my radar a couple of times. There was a strange incident with the Green Lord Mayor a couple of years ago getting rid of the live animal creche, and he stood up for Irish farmers by establishing a live creche in Stephen's Green.
There was a touch
of an Irish version of Culture Wars about that, and there was something else about him allowing cars back into Phoenix Park after the pandemic.
That's right.
So
yeah.
These are the two things I know about him. Do they mean anything in terms of what he actually stands for?
No.
Like, is he, you know, really. Representative of, would he see himself as a representative of rural Ireland, the real Ireland, that kind of thing?
I think he would. Mm. And I think, and without getting into, you know, culture war analysis, I think if you were to pick anyone on the Fine Gael parliamentary party who was to make to take a stance against all the woke tosh, as they call it, on the rest in history, I think it might be Patrick. It might be Patrick O'Donovan. I don't think he would blanch from that description. I think that the appointments to the cabinet, when you look at them, I mean, I suppose the two most conspicuously disappointed people would be Jennifer Carroll McNeill and Neil Richmond. But the, you know, Simon Harris has talked a lot since he became Fine Gael leader about Fine Gael as the party of rural Ireland. I think that the cabinet now, you know, looks and sounds a bit more like,
yeah,
the Fine Gael component of it, certainly as a ministerial team from rural Ireland.
And that's true also of the other appointee, Peter Burke.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Yeah, you take those two together, and, you know, the maintenance of
and he wouldn't have achieved that by putting Jennifer Carroll McNeill, and I'm sure she is disappointed not to have got a cabinet role, but, you know, she's not long in the Dáil herself, and I think actually European Affairs is a pretty. It's a meaty enough job, you know, there's a lot of travel involved.
It's one of a few junior minister jobs that are actually jobs.
Very much so. And it has proven to be a great stepping stone for all those.
That's an interesting subject. We should delve into some other time, Pat. Tell us about all the jobs that aren't actually real jobs at all. You know, we could get into
that. I think we need a glass of wine for that.
We can arrange that.
Okay.
So, Jen, this is pretty minimal, really, isn't it? You know, given that I know some of the speculation, I know it was just speculation, but the new Taoiseach has done the least.
Yeah.
Changes that he could have done.
I think so. And, you know, walking here, leaving Leinster House this evening on my way here, passing different politicians, listening to their chatter and even staff Leinster House. And I actually heard like group after group saying it as I passed. Oh, it's not that big a deal, is it? It's not that dramatic. It's not. It is quite a conservative change, really. And it was easy for him. It was easier for him than previous Taoiseach, because obviously he only has to do, you know, his section of Fine Gael. But also he had two clear vacancies and two, I would say, decent candidates for them, particularly in Peter Burke, who I think has been kind of, Peter Burke would come out a lot on the airwaves and he would often be asked to kind of sometimes defend the indefensible. And that's not an easy thing to do. I think you mentioned before in this podcast that Colin Brophy used to do that an awful lot as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that easy to do. And he did it actually quite well. He's a good media performer. I think he's performed well within the party. And I don't know, I feel like for him, his promotion maybe it was a little bit more obvious. I think Patrick O'Donovan perhaps surprised some people. And there was also speculation about his personal relationship with Simon Harris. There was all this kind of stuff a couple of years ago. Was there a sting operation to find out the leak of a story? Now, which part of any of that is true is actually...
That's a very convoluted story.
It is a convoluted story.
It's a six-part series in and of itself.
It's a six-part series, but obviously I think Simon Harris said something over the weekend, didn't he, that I'm not going to pay attention to rumours when I'm thinking about my potential cabinet picks. And
clearly he wasn't.
And clearly he didn't, yeah.
So let us turn then to the man of the moment, who's Simon Harris, as I said at the top. He's the youngest Taoiseach ever, had his first Ardesh on Saturday, gets elected as Taoiseach on Tuesday. It's the biggest week of his life. I think it's probably a historic first, is it, that his grandparents were there as well to observe him being elected Taoiseach. How's it going so far, Pat? What's your analysis of the Harris era so far?
I don't think he has given us reason to call for his resignation yet.
Yet.
So, because the first thing, you know, that he has to do is pick his cabinet. He's picked his cabinet and he, you know, will want to set out some things. Now he's rushing down here, so he didn't get a chance really to listen to his speech. His speech earlier was, as you would expect, an appeal for unity, motherhood and apple pie and so forth. So just, you know, to set out the choreography, he was voted in as Taoiseach by the Dáil this morning. Then he gives a speech of acceptance. Then he goes to the Oras, becomes Taoiseach, comes back in. And now there's a debate going on in the Dáil as we're recording here this evening. And that will probably be a bit more spicy. And you would also expect Simon Harris to lay out some of the things that that he expects his new government to do and his ministers to do. But, you know, he is constrained by the programme for government. And he is also constrained by the need to establish a relationship with the Green Party, the leaders of the Green Party, and Fianna Fáil. Now, I thought it was, you know, it was interesting that Eamon Ryan, in his speech this morning, talked a lot about, you know, the need for, you know, for the parties to work together and to stick to their agreed programme for government. There was a few overtones, I thought, in Simon Harris's speech at the Fine Gael conference, Fine Gael Ardèche in Galway. On Saturday, in which he talked about things that might have raised green hackles a little bit, where he talked about, you know, Fine Gael being the party of rural Ireland, and Fine Gael would never talk down to farmers, and we would never lecture farmers about climate action. We would work with climate action. I think that was interpreted in some parts of the Green Party as a bit of a warning shot across their bows. Also interesting that Micheál Martin should tonight in his speech tonight take the opportunity to make that announcement on recognition official recognition of Palestine. I wonder, is there an element of getting out ahead of Simon Harris before he might do that? Because Simon Harris was talking very, very strong terms in about both his conference and earlier on today about Palestine. So looking in from the outside and trying to judge it as best we can, it seems to me that there is a process to be gone through between the three leaders of the parties to establish a relationship, a productive relationship of trust that allows the government to function effectively. I mean, that is no more than you would expect. But, I mean, I don't think that either Eamon Ryan or Micheál Martin would have had much of a working relationship with Simon Harris before.
So it's a usual thing. It's a new person
in
the job.
So I think they would probably be feeling one another out. And then I suppose Simon Harris has to figure out what are the few things that he wants his government and particularly Fine Gael ministers to do. He's spoken about this, about, you know, the fact that time is obviously short. He wants them to concentrate on a couple of individual policy priorities and bring those home before the next election. So he's got to figure out what they are and how he presents them.
I want to ask you both in a moment about those operating within those constraints and that very tight time frame as well. But first of all, we haven't actually talked since that Fine Gael Ardèche. And I'm going to ask you both about this. I've got my old arts critic hat on here in a way, Jen, which is I saw that speech and I thought it was appalling. I thought the standard of his speechifying was awful. You know these people and this person, I'd say, a lot better than I do. So I've seen him speak a couple of times in the Dáil, or I've seen him on television. He's quite an adept performer in a TV studio. This was, you know, leaving cert debate standard and pass not honours.
Well, how do I compete with an analysis like that? I have to say I agree with you to a certain extent. I really would have thought that maybe he would have pulled out the stops to a greater degree, not only in that speech, but in his speech today. And to be a little bit unkind about it, I think that actually a lot of what he said in the Dáil this evening and this morning are about his priorities for the months ahead are rehashes of things that were already in motion. So I'll give you a few examples. One of them is in relation to childminders and childcare. And he said, we're going to expedite the legislation to bring in basically childminders who aren't currently in the bracket to be able to get the subsidies. That was actually already underway. And also, I've been writing about that story since 2018. The other thing he said, when he was talking about reappointing Heather Humphreys, he was saying, I want her to work on the auto enrollment. The cabinet has already approved that, and that has been underway for years. Then he talked about, at the weekend, a special package for small businesses, right? And this basically, the big part of this is changing the rules so that employers have to pay less PRSI. Basically, it's the threshold at which you pay the higher rate. It's basically to offset the increase in the national minimum wage. That's been underway since way before Leo Varadkar even signalled that he was going to stand down. There was an options paper brought to Cabinet by Simon Coveney around 5 or 6 weeks ago. And it was already agreed that there'd be proposals by the end of the month. And I just think a lot of it, to me, I kind of found myself saying, oh, we knew that, and we knew that.
And he has a track record of doing that, doesn't he? He's not, I mean, he's not the only one in this government to have a track record of announcing the same thing seven times, is he?
Oh, well, they all do it. That's what politicians do. In fact, like, do you know what? And a lot of the time they tend to get away with it. But no, I have to say that really struck me today. And then housing. Housing is the big thing. At the weekend, obviously, I think he was talking about building 25,000 homes a year between
250,000 over 5 years, which in even in my basic mathematics, I figured that is 50,000 a year. Although he then rolled back a little bit and said it wouldn't be 50,000 a year.
He said it wouldn't be a smooth 50,000 a year. Basically, it would ramp up towards that. And he has a job to explain how he is setting targets that are even the government say.
Well, they contradict what his own government has been saying.
Leo Varadkar said a couple of weeks ago, it's not possible. So these things, and he said today, I think, and here's the quote that he used this morning. Housing remains the greatest societal and economic challenge of our generation. Today, I recommit to moving mountains to help build more homes and drive more home ownership. I've heard that before from Fine Gael.
This time in health, he promised a lot of, he's not the only minister of health to do this, but, you know, he was kind of caught in his own petard a little bit once or twice, wasn't he? When he promised things which signally were not delivered. In fact, some of them may not yet even have been delivered, Pat. So is there a bit of a
famously the free GP care, famously the famously the children's hospital. I think it would be a misunderstanding, however, of how Irish public policy is delivered and how government, the great machine of government, works, to lay all the blame for that at the door of one minister. But what is true, your broader point, I think, does hold water, which is that you can't govern by press release. You actually have to make the machine work. And there's a lot of power at the centre of government. But that power has to be utilised, so the Taoiseach has to be across what is happening in other departments and in those places where the stuff isn't being delivered or policy priorities are not being acted on. He has to be the one to crack the whip, to make sure that the pedal goes the metal, whatever however you wish to describe it. And that is something that we don't have a great deal of evidence that Simon Harris can do that.
He's a known unknown, that's fair to say, isn't it? Because his track record, he hasn't been in one of the big beast ministries. He hasn't been dealing with the kind of the core of the public finances or anything like that.
He was in health. That's an atypical ministry. He was in justice for, six months. Yeah. But, he impressed
his colleagues in justice. He shifted from what he was focusing on. Certainly, they seemed happier with him.
He definitely shifted the tone to a more law and ordery tone.
Yes.
But are we just talking about tone?
But are we just talking about tone? That's the question mark about how Simon Harris will perform as Taoiseach. Is he going to be able to work the machine of government and achieve specific policy priorities that have a political payoff? Or are we just going to get a lot of press releases?
So the slogan at the Fine Gael Ardesh was a new energy, which I think was almost like one of the worst Star Wars films I seem to remember. It was called something like that. Maybe it was A New Hope.
That was A New Hope. Yeah. That was the first one. That was the best of Star Wars.
Oh yeah, they didn't have that stupid title to begin with. They just stuck it on afterwards, didn't they?
Episode 4.
Well, I had to laugh as well at Miriam Lord when she was talking about the song that he chose on the podium. You know, you ain't seen nothing yet, and she said, "Is that a threat?" Burst out laughing when I read
that. So this business of energy, obviously that's in a way you could almost read that as a pushback against what happened to Leo Varadkar, couldn't you? Because one of Leo Varadkar's things was he held up his hands and he fessed up and he said he just didn't have his mojo anymore.
I think that is, that the whole new energy thing, I think, is authentic in that it is an expression of how Simon Harris operates. He does have buckets of energy, and insofar as one would compare him, and I think he wouldn't object to the comparison, it is more with Enda Kenny than it is with Leo Varadkar.
Definitely.
If you know what I mean. And I think he is a politician more, it's not just the energy thing, it's a politician more in that mode than with his predecessor. But that you have to be able to work the machine of government as well, and time is short. And he is absolutely correct that there's only time, you know, to achieve a couple of individual policy priorities in a handful of areas. And so what he has to do is select what they are and sell them, achieve them and sell them to the public. And And I think that's why, and I think he has a, we would probably have a limited enough window with the public where, you know, the public who are not following policy, politics and policy in the detail that we are, but we'll notice that there's a new Taoiseach.
Yeah.
And we'll be interested in what he has to say. And it is what he says to them when he has their attention over the coming weeks, I think that will go a long way towards deciding what his level of success.
What about the idea that, I mean, his main function from a Fine Gael point of view is to be a campaigner? You know, we're just about to launch into the European and local elections. They are second order elections, but they do mean that even for the people who aren't that interested in politics, Jen, there's going to be politicians all over the airwaves all the time and endless arguments and wrangling and posters up in the polls and all that kind of stuff. And an opportunity for him to perform, as I said earlier, where he does better, I think, in, yeah, in a TV studio, in a one-on-one or a one-on-two or whatever it might be. Then we get through the summer, budget speculation, and then it's, you know, smooth glide all the way to what looks now like an election in February, March next year.
I have a first funny feeling it will be anything but a smooth glide all the way to the next election. A feeling it will be anything but that.
Helter skelter.
A luge all the way. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, he's got less than 60 days to the local and European elections. I mean, Fine Gael in the last local elections, I think they went up 20 seats from 235 to 255. It wasn't a terrible day for them, but wasn't as good as they had hoped for or expected. But at the time, I think Sinn Féin only won around 80 seats. They're going to do far better this time. At least I expect that they would do far better this time. And I think for him to have such a huge challenge, even if, like you say, his second order election stuff, such a huge challenge coming up so quickly. So basically, he'll have this judgment made about his leadership faster probably than many of the leaders who've come.
Do you think he'd be blamed
him
for a bad performance, though?
I don't think that he'll be fully blamed. I think people will understand he hasn't actually been there that long, but I think it will make his job that much more difficult if the performance is bad. And, you know, expecting kind of Fine Gael to hold on to the number of seats they have as MEPs is also, that's an uphill battle too. So then you're kind of going into the summer perhaps on the back foot, or you're going into the summer perhaps, you know, maybe not with the best pallor. And then, like you said, you're into the budget. A couple of things. He's constrained by the programme for government. He's constrained by what has already been agreed. The train was already in motion, effectively. I know that there is a feeling within Fianna Fáil, particularly within the Department of Finance, Michael McGrath, kind of looking at the promises that he is making and thinking, slow down there, you know. And because he's kind of coming out saying, we're going to have this package for business, and we're going to talk to the farmers, we're going to have plan for the farmers in 6 weeks. And there's a lot coming down the line for businesses when the attention will turn to that, you know, auto enrolment, extra sick pay days, which may or may not be paused now. And I just think he'll have more of a job in his hands in the budget than perhaps he expects, with Michael McGrath perhaps looking at him going, I don't know about this.
Pat, you have said on more than one occasion that there would be strains that would need to be managed in the last year of this administration as the parties try to define themselves anew to the electorate in advance of the election. But still, it's in their own interests not to fall apart entirely, because almost certainly the proposition they'll be putting to the electorate, either implicitly or maybe even explicitly, is for a continuation of the current government. Does Simon Harris's addition to the mix change that in any way?
It changes the equilibrium a bit, doesn't it? It must do. It's a new element in that dynamic. How will it affect it? I think that depends on, you know, whether he can establish that productive relationship based on a sort of a recognition of interdependent interests between the other two parties. But of course, and this is, you're right, I've spoken about this before, it's one of my current great theses of Irish politics, that they actually haven't worked out how to do this at all, how they are going to be government colleagues and electoral rivals at the same time. And, you know, I was thinking about this morning when I was watching the debate in the Dáil, and there's essentially kind of two narratives about Irish politics at the moment. There's the one that is propounded by Sinn Féin and many of the parties in the opposition, particularly and most vociferously on the extreme left. And it's essentially, you know, Ireland is not quite a failed state, but it's as near as damn it to a failed state. Ireland has been badly governed, terribly governed for decades and decades now, and we need a radical change to make people's lives better. The other narrative is the kind of centrist government narrative. And it says that, you know, Ireland is not a failed state. It is one of the most prosperous places in the world to live in. And it has certainly has problems, but action has been taken by the government to address those problems, and maybe not quickly enough in some respects, but, you know, things are getting better. So that is the argument. It says, you know, we need managed change, not radical change. And those two parallel narratives, the electoral competition really isn't so much between them. It's within them. And so the great electoral competition on the left is between Sinn Féin. It's not so much between Sinn Féin and Fine Gael. It's between Sinn Féin and the parties and candidates on the left that share that narrative.
So it's
and
a bit like Northern Ireland.
In some respects, it is. Now, clearly, look, you know, it's not as neat as that. And there is crossover as well. But within that, if that is true, or indeed, if it's even half true, then there is competition between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and say, you know, the sort of independents that, you know, fishing the same sort of gene pool, including those independents that have supported this government again today. And I just think that that makes the ending of this government and the management of the ending of this government makes it more complicated. And
this is a moving target. What Pat describes there, it is shifting. For example, the softening of the Sinn Féin vote over the course of the last 6 months or so, Jen, and the rise of the independents mean that equations are changing as well. Our colleague Jack Horgan-Jones had an interesting column at the weekend, you know, suggesting that, you know, there is the possibility emerging of a new form of a centre-right alliance that might, you know, be the backbone of the next government, depending how things go, if the independents have a particularly strong result at the next election. So things are changing from maybe what we thought they might have been a year ago.
Oh, very much so. And in fairness to us, we did say on this time many times in the podcast when there was this narrative, and there has been a narrative in some places, that the government, Sinn Féin are a government in waiting, effectively. And, you know, that has never been the case. And if you look at the polls now at the moment, it is entirely conceivable that it would be the same government again, or the same government with the rake of independence. But so much of it is issues driven. I mean, why are independents doing so much better than anybody expected? It's because, I think, of immigration being right up there at the top of issues that are capturing voters' attention. We see that in our snapshot series as well. And I think that, you know, you couldn't have foreseen, I think, just like you couldn't have foreseen an issue like the Dublin riots, you couldn't have foreseen perhaps the swing. I mean, we did talk about the fact that that was happening, but I think that it's more drastic than we'd expected. And also Sinn Féin, kind of every poll that I've seen now for the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 months has had them pretty much stagnating, and they're kind of slipping down in around 24-25%. That is not where they want to be, and it is not where they expect it to be. And I was so interested today looking at the Sinn Féin benches throughout. Now, of course, they're not going to applaud a Fine Gael Taoiseach, and they're not going to, you know, wish them well, despite other, you know, the government TDs saying, oh, that's very sour grapes or whatever. But I was struck looking at them that they just seemed so deflated. They seemed so deflated. And for me, it was really obvious. And a couple of people said it to me as well.
That's interesting. And what did you make of the Mary Lou McDonald's contribution there?
I thought her speech was very good.
It was absolutely full bore. This is a terrible government. The kind of the analysis which Pat talked about there previously. But it was pretty forceful.
She was very forceful. I thought her speech was good. It was, you know, prime Sinn Féin real estate. It was, you know, you can fail your way all the way up to the top. You can fail your way to the top. I mean, and I think that's what got her the headlines when people were covering the opposition reaction, that particular quote. And then really what I picked up from her speech was that she's not going to let Simon Harris forget his time as Minister for Health. She's not going to let him kind of sail in on this, you know, COVID hero bubble cloud. She's going to always be bringing up the waiting list. She's going to always be bringing up the National Children's Hospital, the ballooning costs, scoliosis, broken promises. And, you know, I think she hits a nerve, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And I think
she's got ammunition.
I think her party will be happy with her speech.
And maybe just a last thought on this, Pat. The time frame is rather different. But if things were not to go well over the next few months for Simon Harris, and he does have a tough job, does he just become Ireland's version of Rishi Sunak? That all this business about a new energy is just an attempt to camouflage the fact that Fine Gael have been in power for too long and need to be kicked out for a while in order to revive themselves, and he's just the caretaker to see them out the door?
No, I don't think he's Rishi Sunak, to be honest, because he has a chance of being... he has a chance, that this government has a chance now in the way that, I mean, Jen referred to it earlier. I always thought it had a chance of returning in some shape or form after the next election. Those chances look a lot better now than they did a year ago. Now, we may still be 11 months from an election, and we know that lots changes in the run-in to an election, but the chances of this government in some shape or form, or at least a government founded on the Fianna Fáil Fine Gael alliance being in power after the next election are, you know, certainly not negligible. So that means that Simon Harris can be Taoiseach, maybe not immediately after the next election, maybe halfway through the next term in government. That is not an unrealistic expectation. Whereas I think it's an unrealistic expectation that Rishi Sunak has any chance at all of that. So that's
and
why
also,
I think
Rishi Sunak's
Rishi
party
Sunak.
Is on the verge of ruin. Yes. From what the yeah. if the polls are correct, which is not the case with Fine Gael.
No, Fine Gael are not in complete collapse. They are trending significantly below where they were at the last election. And if Simon Harris is to be an electoral success, and remember that is how his party will judge him, whether he's an electoral success or not, then he needs to climb up a few points. But he doesn't need to climb up all that far. It seems to me that it is a stiff ask for Fine Gael to win another term in government, but not an impossible one. And part of it will, of course, depend on how Fianna Fáil do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm surprised you didn't mention Hugh Leo Varadkar's six reflections. I thought that would be right up your street.
Oh, tell us about them.
I had to mention it because, I mean, Leo Varadkar, it's so funny, isn't it, how quickly in politics you can become yesterday's man. You know, you're the cock of the walk one day. And next of all, I saw him on scrolling through Instagram when everyone was making their speeches. He's just moved on.
In fairness, he used to do that when he was Taoiseach.
He probably did. But I thought his six reflections were interesting. He said the first is that Ireland's a great country. And the second is that this... I actually think the second point is going to come back to bite Fine Gael, right? He said the second is that most, if not all, of the problems we have faced in the past 15 years are international in origin or have a strong international dimension to them. I mean, really?
Maybe.
But it talk about shirking responsibility. You know, it's all thanks to international. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring it up.
He had a point as well, didn't he, about that he regretted that he wasn't more daring?
Yeah, he said, you know, he would... too cautious. If he has any regrets, it was that he was...
Listen to the civil servants too much?
Yeah, I think he was talking about, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the financial crash, you know, the kind of wariness around taking any decisive moves, and perhaps would we have bounced back quicker if you know, we had to pursue maybe more aggressive policies. I think that's pretty much what he was saying. A very interesting point, in fairness, that he did make a very interesting point about national security, about dark clouds being on the horizon. And I presume, obviously, he'd know what he's talking about from his trips around the EU, talking to EU leaders. And then he also made the point about politics and the toxicity of politics, and that politicians themselves are somewhat to blame. And I completely agree.
He moved seamlessly from active politician to elder statesman in a matter of minutes there, Pat.
When we do our counterfactual episodes, our counterfactual series, one of the interesting counterfactuals might be, what if he had gone to the country after the abortion referendum in 2018, which thought occurred to him to do so then, but of course he didn't have the requisite preparations made. I mean, it was in the midst of the Brexit negotiations, was after the abortion referendum. The chat was, I remember being told by one of his allies, no, he's going to do it. He wants his own mandate. I was saying, for sure, you've got nothing lined up. You know, you can't, yeah, you're not ready for it. You know, candidates, you know, preparations made. No, he's going to do it. He'll win his own mandate. I think had he gone, then he would have won his own
We will save that, as you say, for our highly exciting counterfactual series, which we're definitely going to...
Quantum Leap.
Going to do. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do it. We can even call it Quantum Leap, indeed, unless that's patented. But we'll check that out. But we will be back with you very soon, indeed. Thanks to Pat and Jen for coming in this evening. Thanks to our producer, Declan Conlon. We will be back with you very soon, indeed. Until then, thank you for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.